welcome to Cannabis Land, ladies and gentlemen. News Talk 790 WNIS. We have Dr. Denise Foster in studio with us, America's cannabis nurse. She comes from Hemp Haven Wellness, now in Moyock, North Carolina, right below the Virginia border, 726 Carrotoke Highway. You can find her on the web at hemphavenwellness.com, serving all of your wellness needs when it comes to hemp, CBD, and the like. She's got a full staff of cannabis nurses there to serve you. And in that new space in Moyock, more space to play around. The Canna Cabana coming soon. So much to talk about. And also a lot in the news regarding cannabis and hemp. Glad you're with us, 757-627-7979. If you want to ask a question of our expert tonight, Dr. Denise Foster, that is 757-627-7979. Without further ado, welcome back to the Mighty 790, Dr. D.
Great to be here at the beginning of fall. School's back in session. Tourist season, beach season is almost over.
Our last breath of summer, perhaps. We got highs coming up in the 90s, but that's not so bad.
No.
Get a chance to enjoy it, get some beach time in this weekend. Maybe if you're going to the Outer Banks, stop in Hemp Haven.
Yeah, we had a huge turnout for the summer tourist season. It was wonderful to see, right? It's interesting to watch the traffic, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It became a parking lot in front of our shop. In fact, I was joking that we need to begin setting up a lemonade stand out there.
Yes. I was wondering if I would have assumed, I guess, that it would have been busier for you on Saturdays, right, with the rush down to the Outer Banks. A little part of me was worried. I was thinking, oh, no, I hope the traffic isn't so bad that people don't go. But it doesn't seem to be really that big of a problem.
No, it
doesn't.
And
I feel like the traffic's not as bad as it used to be years ago.
It was a lot significant last year. And last year I was coming from Carolina, where I lived, to Chesapeake, where the shop was. And I would have to leave really early in the morning to make sure that I didn't get involved in that. But this year it doesn't seem to be as bad, except we're now looking at an extended season with more people. The kids are back in school. Now we're getting the retirees down there through there. But it's not as significant as it was this summer.
So for anybody who went to the shop in Chesapeake and has not been to the new store yet, the Chesapeake one is no more. Moyock is the new spot. It's bigger and better than ever. And it's only about 10 minutes down the road. If that's for some reason a little too far for you, it's okay, because you still take virtual cannabis consultations, and also people can order online.
Yes, we still ship and deliver across the country. We ship locally to Chesapeake, Norfolk, and Virginia Beach. And then locally in Moyock, we deliver all the way down to Grandy. So we do have that aspect, and I wanted to maintain that for our client base, because we have a lot of individuals who either can't drive or they're on limited income and they don't have the money for gas. Gas is expensive now, so we make sure that we have that service available to them, because they do use it as medicine. And some of these individuals we've been working with for 5 or more years now.
So poke around on the website, hemphavenwellness.com. You can see all the products that she has, and you can see about ordering some for yourself or setting up a time to have a cannabis consultation. She does, of course, also take walk-ins. That's hemphavenwellness.com. Anything about the store that we're forgetting to mention that you want to get out there before we get into the news?
We've just been getting so many referrals from our healthcare partners. It's wonderful. Yeah. As more and more individuals, including the healthcare community practitioners, recognize that cannabis is here to stay.
Yeah.
And our nurse consultations are 100% completely free, because this is the role of cannabis nurses in the community, is to first educate you on whether or not this is appropriate for you. We definitely don't want you to use things that are inappropriate. One of the first models, the first rules in our cannabis as medicine, is that we are in a harm reduction approach. We don't want to make things worse. We want to prevent harms, and the education piece is so important, because so many people have their own stereotype, their own bias and stigma regarding the use of cannabis, while at the same time, the science is you can't deny it anymore. It is medicine. And such so that we'll get into some of the headlines here. One of the most significant headlines just came out last month. And this is at the federal level, because it is, of course, at the federal level where cannabis remains federally prohibited as a Schedule I drug. There's debate right now, and you might have heard it in the news, how the Schedule III is a proposition, and that's getting slowly dragged through the administration at different levels. Despite that, in August of just last month, the Senate panel of the Senate Appropriations Committee was instrumental because they voted unanimously, almost in an 87-9 vote, to allow their veteran administration doctors to begin recommending medical marijuana to military veterans in states where it is legal medically. This is so important because we have decades of research that show how cannabis itself helps our veteran population with so many aspects: PTSD, sleep, pain, just anxiety, depression, prevention of alcoholism, and moving into more harmful drugs like opioids. So we already have the research that shows that these compounds are safe. The Senate committee has now recognized that cannabis is medicine, and therefore they are on the brink of allowing their VA practitioners to recommend it to their veteran populations. That includes those in Virginia. Virginia has a legal medical program, so if you already have your medical marijuana card, you're already grandfathered in. But the next iteration of this is when the VA is going to begin allowing their own practitioners on their federal veteran administration sites to begin recommending cannabis. It's going to be huge for the veteran population. We already know that RFK has, as the Department of Health and Secretary of Health and Human Services, he's already made mention about psychedelics. Cannabis is a part of that. It's ironic that RFK himself was arrested when he was a young Kennedy. I believe he was around 18 years old when he got busted for smoking the reefer. But it's all coming full circle now as the Senate has recommended cannabis as a alternative treatment with a specific focus to reduce opioid use and abuse among veterans. So they themselves have recognized that cannabis can be useful as a medicine, which is going to further the argument that cannabis should be rescheduled at Schedule 3.
You say that in states where it is legal medicinally. So what does that mean for our friends in North Carolina right now?
North Carolina is undergoing its own interesting evolution. Right now, North Carolina has no medical marijuana program, a very, very restrictive, I should say, medical marijuana program, and it has absolutely no marijuana legalization at all. It is decriminalized. For instance, you can possess up to less than half an ounce on you and be felony, but they don't have any medical marijuana programs. And this is where just a few months ago, the governor of North Carolina came out and surprised everyone. In June of this year, Governor Josh Stein of North Carolina came out and said it's time for North Carolina to legalize THC. This was shocking to everyone in North Carolina who didn't see this coming, but it's Governor Stein's perspective that all adults 21 and older should have a choice to use a federally legal product or state legal product, with the most significant understanding from Governor Stein is that he recognizes due to the, and I'm reading now from the Governor Stein's announcement on June 4th of this year, due to the cannabis industry's unchecked and creative product development and packaging, the terms hemp and marijuana have lost their traditional meanings and are essentially the same thing. Boy, do I feel vindicated, because I recognized this when they launched the Farm Bill. When they enacted the Farm Bill in 2018, I could not believe what I saw, that they had enacted the same plant that contained the same compounds, albeit in different concentrations. But hemp and cannabis, you can still get cannabis THC from marijuana or cannabis THC from hemp, and they have the same effects. So in Governor Stein's perspective, he has launched a committee that has met already this year, made up of North Carolina officials, health officials, law enforcement, judicial officials, etc. And in his request, he wants to make cannabis THC, either from hemp or marijuana, legal, accessible, safe, lab tested. We're going to make sure that it's child proofed and age gated. And then he wants to distribute it like alcohol, and regulate it like alcohol and tobacco. He is among the first state leaders in the nation, in the United States, to come to the realization that hemp and marijuana are the same. And the federal government is just horrified to recognize that they pretty much legalized marijuana when they launched the Farm Bill, when they enacted the Farm Bill in 2018, because now that industry has exploded. In fact, the federal government has just come out to realize that they are completely undervaluing the hemp market. Get these numbers. In 2024, the amount of hemp that was produced in the United States was 20.8 million pounds. 20.8 million pounds of hemp were produced in the United States. And of course, that's for both industrial use and medicinal use, like what we do at Hemp Haven. According to the current way that they evaluate how hemp is valued, that amount, 20.8 million, was approximately 386 million. But with the technology, the advancements of all of the products that we can now derive from hemp, the medicines, the industrial uses, et cetera, the new evaluation, the value of hemp for that 20.8 million pounds is now considered to be $6.9 billion. $6.9 billion in hemp. And they're encouraging farmers to begin looking at using hemp as part of their, at least, rotation or part of their population of what they farm. For instance, farmers are getting significantly more from hemp as a return, with a 24% return on their investment, versus corn at 15% or soy at 7%. So the value of hemp is increasingly getting the reflection, is reflecting, of what is actually happening based on consumer demand and industries realizing that they can use hemp-based products for many different industrial uses. And it's illegal. It's legal and available right now. So while the schizophrenic United States of Cannabis continues to argue over marijuana, is it going to Schedule 3? Is it going to be descheduled and removed from the controlled substance list altogether? That's going to take a few more years, as the industries are now tasked with figuring out how to remove these prohibition threads. For instance, the Veterans Administration, they're going to be the first domino to fall. Once they allow their VA practitioners to recommend medical marijuana, there is no more federal prohibition, because you can't have a federal entity like the VA administering a Schedule I drug. So this all hinges on the movement of marijuana off Schedule I to Schedule III. But in the meantime, there are no schedule regulations based in hemp. As long as hemp meets the definition that is ascribed to it by the Farm Bill, which is less than 0.3% Delta-9 THC by dry weight, hemp is available in every state across the country. And when you look at the states that do traffic in both marijuana and hemp, we are now finding that states that have actually made criminal or made marijuana inaccessible, those states are seeing more of the hemp-derived products, and that's, again, kicking into this hemp valuation, because states that banned marijuana sales, like Virginia, right? We were supposed to have legal adult sales in Virginia back in 2024. States that banned marijuana sales are now seeing more sales of hemp-based products, because we're back to consumer demand.
Right.
The demand is there. The access is there for federally legal hemp. And as long as the vendors, retailers, the producers, et cetera, adhere to the Farm Bill regulations, it is completely legal.
And we're just at the beginning of the business side of this, of them figuring out, of them awakening to the fact that this is a market that they haven't tapped in yet.
That's right.
And so we're just now seeing all these products spring up.
That's right. We talked last month about how cannabis is now being used as a substitute or to completely replace or reduce the amount of pharmaceuticals. And that is also true with alcohol. Here is a report that came out, a drug survey that was completed by Drug Rehab USA last month showed that more young American adults are opting for cannabis drinks over alcohol during the happy hours or get-togethers and hanging out with friends. So more of your Generation Zs and your millennials are avoiding alcohol, so much to the point that last year, alcohol sales lost 44% of revenues. That's a large amount of non-drinking going on out there. Over 66% of American adults have now admitted that they've tried alcohol alternatives like cannabis over the past year, and 24% say they have mostly partially replaced their alcohol with cannabis drinks. This is a seminal time in American history because the average American is at the lowest in history using alcohol as a drug. Alcohol is a drug. Alcohol is a depressant. And when you think of the number of Americans who have no problem stopping by their convenience store, or their neighborhood grocery store, and picking up a 6-pack or 12-pack, mm-hmm. no one questions that.
Right.
And it's been going on forever and ever since, of course, the amendment, the 22nd Amendment, repealed alcohol prohibition during Al Capone's days. We're still undergoing the marijuana prohibition, but in the meantime, this is where these hemp-derived beverages are now replacing alcohol, and people feel better for their use. They don't have their hangover effects. The alcohol is not damaging to their body tissues. They sleep great if they're in pain from working all day out in the field or sitting behind a desk and now your back is killing you. These non-alcohol cannabis mocktail drinks is what is driving people to this type of industry. And that's where, again, hemp is playing the biggest role, because we can now use hemp to develop these drinks using the same compounds that we can derive from marijuana with the same effects. Not only are we looking at some of the compounds like THC to get that uplifting, euphoric, feel-good effect in the drinks, we also know that compounds like CBD have the potential to treat alcohol use disorder. So we can help our population who has maybe been too free with their alcohol use. Maybe we can help them by reducing their withdrawal symptoms using a non-intoxicating, non-impairing compound like CBD. And a new study that was just published last month in the journal Nature has showed that CBD also reduces the risk of relapse. This is what we're seeing in our wellness dispensary in Moyock. People are coming in buying non-alcoholic mocktail drinks in cases, in yeah. 6-packs, because they're saying that it just feels good. One drink could last them 2 or 3 days, because you don't necessarily need to drink the whole entire thing.
That's a great point. You know, it depends on what the dosage is, because some are obviously higher than others. But sometimes a quarter of the can, a third of the can of the beverage is all you need. Maybe you can mix it with a soda or something else, and so that makes it last even longer. Compare that with, you know, a 12-pack of beer. And most beers that you're going to get at the grocery store are like, what, 4%, 5% alcohol? So
drink a lot of them.
To feel a buzz, you got to drink about 6 of them.
You got to drink a lot of them.
Right, exactly.
When you think about you mentioned the dosage aspect. The dosage is so important, and we're finding that out in so many different ways, because each one of these compounds is specific, meaning that your body, your use of these compounds is going to be unique to you, and that's where cannabis nurses yeah. like me come in.
Yep.
But in the meantime, we're back to the drinks where you can buy a can that has 50 milligrams of THC and 50 milligrams of CBD. That can technically is 10 doses, 10 pours. We would call that maybe a shot. If you're a bourbon girl like me, that could be a couple fingers. Mm-hmm. That's how we measure, you know, most of the whiskeys yep. with the whiskey spirits. So this is where not only can we replace or reduce the alcohol consumption, compounds derived from the cannabis plant, specifically hemp, can actually potentially treat alcohol symptoms, including withdrawal and relapse. And guess what these individuals are more than likely going to use after they have completely gotten off all of their cravings for alcohol? They're more than likely going to stick in the non-alcoholic mocktail THC beverage line, because this is the effect that they're looking for. Alcohol is a depressant. They're using it to depress their mood. But that doesn't mean that we can't make even beer healthier. So before we get to the break, I wanted to just throw this one at you. So as we know that alcohol is a fermenting process, and beer is brewed a specific way. So this is a report that was just published last month in the scientific journal Molecules that showed if we use hemp seeds, back to the hemp industry, these little pearls that keep jumping out, using cannabis hemp seeds during the beer brewing process enhances the nutritional value of beer. Are we about to make beer healthy? It's a little known fact that both cannabis, hemp, and hops are related. They're both in the same botanical family. And when you are able to combine cannabis seeds, hemp seeds in the brewing process, we have now added the compounds that will help exhibit an anti-inflammatory, an immunomodulatory, and neuroprotective properties. This means that we have a beer that could potentially reduce inflammation, reduce oxidative stress, which is the source of all disease, and protect the nerves. This is crazy. And another example of how, when we look at the science of how we can apply even the hemp compounds, there is no end in sight. We're going to be looking at ways throughout every facet of our American Western diets, our beer use, our beer making. We have hemp flour that you can use. We have some hemp seed oil that is a nutritional value. The sky is the limit. And the hemp valuation, I think, was discounted as everyone focused on marijuana. But with the understanding that the hemp industry is now taking off, and even governors like Josh Stein of North Carolina recognize that it has some value, we need to get to a point of first educating and safety as our priorities.
And that's what Dr. D is all about. So if you're new to cannabis, if you're new to hemp, Dr. D is your best friend. You just don't know it yet. Go see her at Hemp Haven Wellness. She is at 726 Carrituck Highway, right below the Virginia border in Moyock, North Carolina. Her website, hemphavenwellness.com. Her phone number, 252-340-3557. Hemp Haven Wellness now opens 7 days a week, Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., Thursday through Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m., and they're always on the web at hemphavenwellness.com. So remember, you can order online. Also, if you like what Dr. D is talking about, check out the podcast that Dr. D and I do together. It's called Cannabis Nurse Truths. That's at cannabisnursetruths.com. Got a half hour to go with Dr. D. She's with us until 7 on News Talk 790 WNIS. Talk 790 WNIS. Hope you're enjoying your Thursday evening, and thank you for spending a portion of it with Dr. D and I. Dr. Denise Foster is with us from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrituck Highway, right below the Virginia border in Moyock. Her website, hemphavenwellness.com. Dr. D is with us until 7. If you want to chime in, if you have any questions for the great doctor, 757-627-7979. That's 627-7979 for our one and only cannabis nurse, Dr. D. What else is happening in the news?
So much is happening. It's hard to keep up. The science and the regulations are just spinning, and it's an exciting time to be in cannabis, but it's also very frustrating. But it's coming to a point where things are going to tease out in the next couple years. Before we move into some of the science related to the health benefits and what's going on as far as safety issues, one of the things that we've been keeping an eye on, I know you and I, Lee, have talked about this for years, is the fact that most of our veteran population may also possess a firearm.
Yes.
And that's always been quite a conundrum for those that want to get a marijuana card. In fact, when I was recommending or working with veterans who were looking to use medical marijuana in their specific states, one of the first questions inevitably was, will this, if I go on a state registry with the medical marijuana card, will this be cross-referenced with another federal registry that I've had to fill out and where I answer a question that says, do you use any federally prohibited substances? And that's the conundrum, because if you're a medical marijuana card holder and you possess a gun registration, you have now put yourself in a predicament.
Right.
If you answered yes, well, you should have been denied a gun registration, because currently cannabis is considered a Schedule I drug, prohibited. If you answered no, and now you're on a registry saying you use medical marijuana, well, now you're lying, and now that's still a felony. You've lied on a federal form. This is something that has been an issue with over 40 million Americans now using cannabis. In fact, almost 88%, almost 9 in 10 Americans now believe that cannabis should be used legally at either a medicinal or an adult use purpose. So we have a majority either believing that it should be legal, while over 70 million Americans have been using it as far back as 1996, when Prop 215 was legal in California, giving us our first medical marijuana program.
Wow! So we're up to 90% now of people who are in favor.
We are,
because I could, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago tops, that number was like 60.
This is from a Gallup poll that was published earlier this year, in which 88%, so roughly 9 out of 10 Americans, believe that cannabis should be used legally.
Wow.
So it needs to be regulated, again, back to the safety. But we're back to this, the regulations at the federal level that are hinging on this prohibition. This is a case that we have followed, or that I have followed, and we've talked a lot about, especially in our podcast, when what I said a couple of episodes ago, it's guns or cannabis. You can't have both, according to what the rules are currently. However, there was a man back in Oklahoma in 2022. His name was Jared Michael Harrison. And he, at that time, was a medical marijuana card holder in Oklahoma, where it was legal. And during a traffic stop, Mr. Harrison was found to have a firearm in the vehicle as well. And that's where this whole case began. So since 2022, it has progressed through the courts, where just in August 28th, this was a judgment that has been released by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit. They ruled on appeal, because the first court ruled that it was untenable for Mr. Harrison to own both a firearm and a medical marijuana card, making him a felon. He took that to the appeals court, and on last Tuesday, the U.S. Court of Appeals dismissed that indictment and instead argued that the government must prove that people who use marijuana pose a risk of future danger if it wants to justify the continuing law banning cannabis consumers from owning firearms. This is going to be another monumental shift at the federal level, much like the VA, in that now we have to bring in the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment of the Constitution guarantees the right to bear and possess arms. And the definition of mental illness has been what's been used for the government to argue that those who use cannabis are not responsible and they're not able to exercise self-control. Well, you know who else can't exercise self-control? People who use a lot of alcohol and carry around a lot of guns. Maybe people who are using some mind-altering pharmaceuticals known as antidepressants and anti-anxieties and sedatives and other hormonal displacing endocrine disrupting drugs. So the Department of Justice has argued against the federal ban on mentally ill people and throwing cannabis users in there, saying that the government cannot continue to use mental illness, mental unwellness, mental health as an argument for cannabis users. The government has the onus of burden of proof to show that those who use cannabis are also a danger to society. And so this Court of Appeals has struck down this law regarding cannabis use and allowing a person to own a firearm at the same time concurrently. And this is going to be a big another piece that is going to help our population, many of whom use guns and cannabis at the same time, not feel that they are going to be targeted and harassed and potentially even lose livelihoods, going to jail, having to deal with expensive court cases and appeals like this man has done. So good on them that the Department of Justice has argued back at its own government that you cannot use this very restrictive clause and put all cannabis users in that same category as being mentally unfit. It's incredible to see how cannabis is coming out of the dark ages almost, and the reefer madness that we were counting on, right, the prohibitionists, those that were against cannabis legalization or at least rescheduling, those prohibitionists have been touting the unsafe factors regarding cannabis use, for instance, driving. Over and over again, we've had studies that show that cannabis users are actually safer drivers even if they drive at all, because most cannabis users would prefer to sit home on their couch and not go anywhere or hang at the concert and then allow that cannabis effect to eventually dissipate within 2 to 3 hours. So the safety arguments are, again, looking in this case at when possessing a firearm becomes a danger. We don't see or hear too much in the news about people who are super stoned going out conducting mass murder or robbing banks. That doesn't seem to happen too often. Now, they may have something on their possession. So now we're using the correlation that because you simply have it on your person or in your car, like this man did, now you're a threat to society. And the Department of Justice has argued that that should not be the case. The wheels of science and legislation are turning such that we have more evidence that cannabis can significantly decrease the use of opiates in even chronic pain patients. This is where we're looking to replace completely opioid use, or at least reduce it to a point where it is not as fatal as it has been, especially if you consider the amount of fentanyl that could potentially be laced with those opioids. Yeah, so, and right. That's where we're getting most of our danger. Here is a study that was just published last month in the journal Pain Management that showed co-prescription, so using both opioids and cannabinoids, may enable patients to reduce their opioid consumption prescribed for chronic benign pain. These are our pain management patients. What they did in this study is they followed this group of pain management patients over a year. They received a very moderate dose of THC, 15 milligrams of THC, but they combined that with a 15 milligrams of CBD. So now we have a 1-to-1 ratio of THC at 15 milligrams apiece. After a year of using a standardized ratioed cannabinoid product like this, they found that these people in the study significantly decreased their opioid dose from 40 milligrams a day to 2.7 milligrams a day. They went from 40 milligrams to 2.7 milligrams per day.
They almost got rid of it.
And then they were followed after this year's study of them using a baseline 1-to-1 15 milligram CBD THC. They were followed for a year after the study was completed to see, did they kind of relapse and go back on their opioids to control their pain because it wasn't doing enough? No. At both a 6 and 12 point measure, they were still taking the cannabinoid blend over opioids. So we're back to understanding that using cannabis in an appropriate dose, a ratioed dose, is how we can target so many conditions, including chronic pain, for which people are desperate to get out of, so much so that they may be taking up to 40 milligrams a day. The side effects for this were the physical activity and sleep also improved, and so now they got off their anti-inflammatory medicines and their sleep medicines. So not only did they reduce and potentially eliminate their opioid use, they also got off of drugs that may also have been impacting the pain that they were feeling. Because pain and sleep, they go together, and inflammation is what drives the whole party.
Not to mention, they're moving around more. They're living a healthier lifestyle.
Quality of life.
That has so many different effects, positive effects in and of itself.
Quality of life is what we find that cannabis gives people their life back. They are able to dose themselves appropriately, and it is knowing what compounds to use is where the science is reflected in the practice. This is what we do all day long as a cannabis nurse. We do this. We meet one-on-one individually with individuals who are interested in using cannabis for a medicinal purpose. They don't want to be impaired. Some of them don't even want to use THC, which is perfectly fine because many people don't need THC.
Sure.
But in a pain condition, this study has shown that using a very low dose, by the way, which is not available in Virginia because Virginia made this dose illegal, hence our move to Moyoc.
Right.
Even so, a small amount of THC provided enough pain relief that was able to not only affect the pain condition and the reduction in opioids, but also improve their quality of life. Back to the understanding that this is an individual compound, and which is why education and meeting individually with people is so important. Here's a study that was just published and came out of Israel. I have a preprint, so I don't have the journal title yet, but this comes out of the Technion Israel Institute of Technology, where they look to see what types of THC were best for treating pain. We're now getting into what are the dosage studies and what can we combine with the THC that may, like in this study with CBD, do a better job at helping treat the pain while at the same time reducing that reliance on THC that could potentially cause impairment. This study showed that cannabis has a genuine therapeutic effect for pain management. However, the degree of relief provided by the cannabis can be predicted. Hello, we now can predict the specific chemical profile that could help address pain in conditions, because we know that pain affects people differently. We've got nerve pain, that's known as neuropathy. We've got organ pain, this is known as deep tissue pain. We've got just mechanical pain, that's your arthritis pain from everyday wear and tear as you get older, or from injury. Then you've got surgical pain, menstrual pain, headache, seizure pain, migraine pain. It goes on and on. This report that has just come out of Israel concludes by saying this is the first evidence for compound-specific therapeutic effects. This has been my argument for the past 10 years. People who don't want to use marijuana don't want to use it because it makes them high. Yeah. And what is it in marijuana that makes you high? It's the THC. So the argument here is, well, why does the cannabis plant have, now that we studied it, the cannabis plant has over 180 compounds in it, of which THC is one of them. Researchers are now looking at each in a specific compound to recognize where does it work in the body, what amount is needed for it to have an effect. And then when we combine two or more of these compounds, cannabinoids, together, does that seem to have an even more beneficial effect, as we now can encompass and target numerous tissues and receptors and processes within the body safely without causing adverse effects if we don't want to?
Of all of those cannabinoids, you said 180?
There's now been discovered over 180.
How many of them do we have a handle on in terms of we know what it does and what it can be used for? Because it's not all of them yet. That's why we're still studying this, right?
We probably have enough data on less than 60.
We know a lot about those 60.
And those 60 are specifically related to the pharmaceutical companies who are using the patent on cannabis, right? We've talked about that.
Right.
The patent on cannabis that was published as medicine in 2003 and awarded to the United States Department of Health and Human Services for cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants, and the synthetic cannabinoid family is about to be launched as the pharmaceutical companies are heavily invested in these specific cannabinoids like CBD, THC. We've talked about CBN, CBG, THCV. We've talked about all of the ones that are thus to date the most heavily researched, and that's where the focus of the pharmaceutical companies are, so they can synthesize these compounds and put them in a pill to deliver them to you.
So in short, heads up, breakthroughs on the horizon.
Absolutely breakthroughs. The fact that we now have literature, research, science that says we know that if we combine these cannabinoids in these doses to target these effects, we can now predict a treatment outcome. This is something that is a gold standard in medicine. When you replace your knee, I'm sure you go for a knee replacement, yeah, a hip replacement. Your surgeon is telling you, this is what we expect the outcomes to be, both good and bad.
Sure.
We have risks associated with that, but we also expect these are the benefits that you're going to get. Hopefully a better functioning knee without pain.
Right.
This is the predictable outcome that we now can show from the chemical combinations that allow us to specifically target an outcome that the individual wants from cannabis use. This is our wheelhouse. Cannabis nurses do this in clinical practice every day. And our team of cannabis nurses down in Hemp Haven, they have all learned this magic. I joke with them that 200 years ago, we would have been designated witches. We would have been dunked down at the end of Witch Duck Road, because we are now recognizing how to use these plant compounds to address and reverse and potentially fix and prevent specific conditions. The jury is out. Cannabis is medicine. Cannabis is medicine. The VA has recognized it. The pharmaceutical companies are trying to capture that science and put it in a pill so they can sell it to you. But in Virginia, you're allowed to grow this in your backyard right now. Yeah. You just go on YouTube and figure out how to get it out of the plant. A few more things before we close today. One of the things that I've been interested in is how Virginia is actually using education to educate people like we do at Hemp Haven. So this is interesting from a practitioner survey that was published by the Virginia Cannabis Control Authority in June, which surveyed the practitioners who were allowed to recommend cannabis. And what was interesting, a few key points, was that each appointment was approximately 70% of them lasting 30 minutes or less. They say this is like a bad thing. I bet 30 minutes is about 25 more minutes that you get in your doctor's office. But this is beneficial because, to me, this tells me that these recommending practitioners are at least looking at the individual as and talking them with them and educating them and helping them understand what conditions may be benefited by their use of cannabis. Another interesting point out of this survey from practitioners was that anxiety is the most reported condition for Virginians to be issued a medical marijuana certificate. This kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, because we know that anxiety can either be treated by cannabis or it can be provoked. It can be caused by cannabis. And this is what makes this number even more concerning, is that the practitioners said that they felt not very comfortable. 36% of these practitioners felt not comfortable making dosing or product recommendations. So here we have a 30-minute consultation with a regulated VA Virginia practitioner that's allowed to recommend medical marijuana for you, but over a third of them do not feel comfortable making dosing or product recommendations, but yet at the same time, the number one condition for which they are recommending is anxiety. Well, I hope that at least they're telling them to use very small amounts, because what's coming into our dispensary is people are saying, we went to the dispensary and we didn't have a pleasant experience. The practitioners concluded that they believe that product type and dosing education would be very helpful. And this has to be occurring immediately, because as we've just illustrated over the last hour, cannabis science, regulations, and trends are expanding incredibly fast. And it's hard to keep up in this world, which is making my job really exciting down there in Moyoc. But we need to do a better job at educating everyone, from our politicians all the way down to the individual who wants to use cannabis as medicine.
Never a dull moment, eh?
Never a dull moment. And the industry is, in my world, hemp side, just exploding, and that means we're adding products every day.
Hemp Haven Wellness, she is in Moyoc, North Carolina, right below the Virginia border, 726 Carrituck Highway. Check her out on the web, hemphavenwellness.com. Her phone number, 252-340-3557. And Dr. D, Hemp Haven, now open 7 days a week. Check her out Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. It's not just you either. It's your whole team of canna nurses down there.
We have an entire staff. We've got delivery drivers. I've got a Canna Cabana manager on board now. I hope he's listening. Hey, Steve. So when you think about how many, the demand, right? We want to make sure that when you come down there, you're getting either a one-to-one consultation from a cannabis nurse, where we devote at least an hour to you, to go through the education pieces, whether or not you're appropriate for use, what you want to use it for, the dosages, etc. Or you're talking with one of our cannabis consultants,
right,
who have all been trained by me. So I have to throw me in there, because this is a science that is actually going to improve the health of every community across America.
Still taking walk-ins?
Take walk-ins. We do telehealth, where you can schedule a virtual via the phone or the you know, video if you want. You can bring friends and family. We review health records with you. And then, of course, we still do delivery and shipping across Hampton Roads area as well.
All the details you need, hemphavenwellness.com, and check out the podcast. We took a break recording new episodes for the summer, but we are back at that now. You'll be seeing them soon at cannabisnursetruths.com and at Canna Podcast on X. hemphavenwellness.com for Hemp Haven. Dr. D, always good to see you.
See you next week. Next month. Have a great week.
See you when we see you. It is News Talk 790 WNIS.
Program is sponsored and paid for by Hemp Haven. It's entirely responsible for its content.